please. Do you want to do Omar?
Call to order the meeting of the special meeting of the Board of Trustees. We have a roll call, please.
Yes, Trustee Robert Boy. Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Trustee Matthew Helms.
Here.
Trustee Sherilyn Muir. Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers.
Here.
And Board Chair Mark Strauss.
Here.
Thank you.
Mr. Blakemore, can you verify the existence of a quorum and appropriate notification of the public meeting?
Mr. Chair, you do have a quorum, and this meeting has been called to the underlying regions.
May I have a motion to approve the agenda with the deletion of the closed session, please?
Thank you.
So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I have no opening comments. Dr. Long, I believe you're the only University Council representative still.
I have no opening comments either. Thank you.
Thank you. Regarding public comments, there are two requests. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So the first that I have is from Bessie Chronopoulos. And hello. No, take us.
Oh, no, don't tell me that.
But please. But please find a microphone.
I don't even need to sit. I'll even use my teacher voice.
Okay.
Get you all in line. There we go. You each have, or should have, or will have, a copy of this handout. It's a two-page handout. It's dated July 21st. And basically, the first three paragraphs are addressed to you to please take a moment or to, perhaps not now necessarily, but later, to read through what I have here below, which is a copy from an article in a blog that I think you might find interesting. And at the end of that, as indicated in my short note to you, is a comment that I made on that blog. And it is, the information that was stated here in this article is quite disturbing because it deals with some negative actions on the part of past and present NIU administrators involving certain zoning regulations with the city of DeKalb. As a matter of fact, anything that is negative that comes out of the university is of great interest to me and to many, many others because, as I've stated before when I've met with you, NIU and the city of DeKalb are very important entities, and we need to look at situations that are brought to our attention and look at them very diligently to make sure that only appropriate behavior and procedures and interactions are taking place. So I'm urging you to take the time to study through this, talk amongst yourselves, and at least promise me that you'll be diligent in looking through this. And I know many of you personally over the years, and you know where I'm coming from. All I'm interested in is best practices and transparency. It's simple as that. Where does the extra sheet go to? Oh. Where's the lady? There we go. If you can pass that down to her.
I was going to say, hopefully I pass it down versus being the lady.
Well, there, she's a lady. Thank you very much.
Thank you
any
for
questions?
Your
or, no? Okay. You can call me anytime you want.
Virginia Naples?
Another one there. Okay. I have spoken before this body before about sex discrimination on salaries, and because there was not a very long amount of time available, I just thought I'd come back and give you an update and a brand new installment. And I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak. This is my university and my university board of trustees and administrators, and I would like to have you be more well informed about what is going on. There is some things that I have presented the last time that I gave you the pink and blue spreadsheet and talked about the entire College of Liberal Arts and Sciences faculty and what is, to most people's view, a very clear case of sex discrimination. And pink for girls, blue for boys. I kept the pink theme here, but I didn't do the blue because it was a little bit too busy. But I have a much greater detailed analysis here of biological sciences. And if you just want to follow through with this, what I'm doing is, for the first column, I have changed people's names to letters, but the letters are consistent across. And the pink ones, of course, are the females. This is from the inception of their hiring at NIU to 2010. Now, we all know that faculty have a variety of responsibilities, and those responsibilities typically are divided into teaching, research, and service. And that is ostensibly what everyone is to be evaluated upon, whether it's an annual or a biannual evaluation. In practice, there is lip service given to teaching, unless there's something extraordinary about it, or there's a specific contract for an individual to be a primarily teaching or a teaching-only appointment. But for the average professor who is engaging in those three kinds of activities, teaching is not counted very much, if at all, in the evaluations in practice, although not on paper. The professional public service component, likewise, is looked at and perhaps debated and discussed, but pretty much ignored as well. What it comes down to, what faculty are evaluated upon in reality, is number of research publications in peer-reviewed journals. There is also variably some credit given for grantsmanship, but this is not consistent. It is not consistent within my department, which is what I know the most about, from year to year. And I know from talking with other collaborators and colleagues across campus, it is not consistent within their departments or across departments by any means. So what I'm looking at here is, in 2010, I'm comparing the number of publications, which, if you look at the first column, number A, this is a person who at that point in 2010 had 86 peer-reviewed publications. The FP is for full professor, and that person is person A. And you can see as you go across where their salaries are. And what I did was I compared the ranking for research, which is what the evaluation is dependent upon, and the salary. And you can see it doesn't correlate for any of the women. Now, in all honesty, when I did the arrows the other way, about 50% of the males had a higher research score than their salary would indicate in the rank order, but also 50% of them were also lower. So it was about half and half. But 100% of the women's salaries are way down, with the exception of, if you look at number Z, or Z number 26, this was an individual who had, and of course, because I have direct history of the department, this was an individual who had severe health problems and ultimately died as a result of complication of health problems that had probably affected her entire adult life and was just not capable of dealing with the issues. And then I looked at a comparison in 2014, and again you can see that the salaries are going down, the arrows going down. Again, you get kind of a mix with the males, but with all the females, they're going down, with the exception of the last two, who are the brand new assistant professors. And most of the other people have been in rank for a very long period of time. If you go down a little bit below, if we could go to the next thing on the screen, just pull up from 2008 down, that is the female means compared to the male means for biological sciences. And they vary from 90% of the male mean down to 80% of the male mean through various years. And it changes depending on the composition of the faculty, how many full professors, how many associate, how many assistant professors. Biological sciences went through a very great bottleneck. For many years, there were no faculty hired. So those of us who were in the early cohort, I was hired in 1983. I've actually completed my 32nd year here, and I have kept statistics and tracked all those data for all that length of time. I could tell you for hours about statistical things and the financial issues, and still working on it. But this is a very consistent pattern. And this is a very subtle pattern, and what it is simply, again, I'm calling this another version of a smoking gun that shows that the accomplishments of women faculty are discounted in comparison to their male counterparts, because the women's performance in terms of publications, which is the only thing that has been valued by the evaluations committees, are higher than their salaries. And I had some instances where, to use my own as an example, that I was told when I first got there, most of my publications were sole author. And I was told that that was not a good thing, that I needed to acquire collaborators because it looked like I was not collegial enough to work with other people. So I acquired collaborators, and I still did some publications that were on my own. And I was told that, well, the collaborators were the ones that had contributed the data, and I was just got my name on the paper because I walked down the hall at the right time, and that the papers that I was still publishing had, as single author, I just had not given credit to the people who had actually done the work. Those are the levels of subtle forms of discrimination that these numbers demonstrate in biological sciences. Now, we've had faculty salary equity task forces done in 2004, 2008, and again an in-house one in 2011, 2012. And the first two, we could not get an actual understanding of the analysis. We were told, because this was, I was on the Presidential Commission of the Status of Women at the time, and Steve Cunningham, whom some of you may know and remember, was asked to come and speak to us, and he very nearly didn't escape that room alive without agreeing that they would release something about the methodologies for the Presidential Commission on the Status of Women. This was the 2007-2008 season where it was done. And what they finally released was the executive summary, and the executive summary said they used sophisticated multiple regression analyses. Well, I'm a biologist. Not only do I do math, I do statistics, I like numbers, I deal with numbers. I never got the memo that girls can't do math and science. Sorry, never got delivered. And so I looked at that, and from those reports, it said that 20-some-odd factors were used to do those sophisticated multiple regression analyses. Anyone who does scientific work faces the fact that you cannot use that many parameters, because every time you add a new parameter to your analysis, you are adding a series of additional assumptions that are going to skew the results in unpredictable ways. You just can't do it. You can't get a big enough data set. And if you keep throwing things in there, eventually you'll find some sort of a spurious correlation, but it may very well be just imaginary. And so I've gone through that, and one of the things that people have said is that there are four factors that ultimately were used. Sex. Because we're looking at male versus female, that's logical. Length of time in rank, that presumably assumes that you get salary increments as you go along through your career. And then annual merit, and then long-term merit. I was told long-term merit was 15 years. That immediately makes it impossible to use long-term merit evaluations for either assistant or associate professors. I do not believe in the history of NIU there has been an assistant professor in a tenure-track position that could come up for associate professor that has been there for more than the 6 or maybe 7 years, and certainly not 15. The vast majority of people who achieve tenure and are associate professors are not necessarily going to be in rank for 15 years, because the average person will try to come up for promotion to full professor in, again, another 6th year or 7th year. But then if you achieve full professor status, having an additional 15 years is not necessarily likely to happen. That will bring the average person who starts their assistant professor track in their early 30s to close to retirement time by the time they have achieved 15 years. So 15 years is a very difficult number to deal with. One of the other things that I wanted to mention is that in biological sciences, all of the women who have attempted in the last 32 years to be promoted from assistant to associate professors have been judged by their peers, and both within the university and outside, and have been awarded tenure. 94% of the male candidates have done so. So it's a 6% difference, but it is something. But the other thing, when you look at the length of time in rank from being an associate professor to being promoted to full professor, for the women is 9.9 years, when it is 6.1 for the men. So those are very significant differences. I could run percentages and stuff, but I didn't do that for you. It's all on here. And so I don't believe that this is an unbiased analysis of the accomplishments of the women. 100% of the women should not have their salaries lower than their research publications should merit they would do. And I have suffered very greatly from this, as have all the other women in my department. And this is the subtle reality of what is going on with the sex discrimination that is going on campus. And I'm sure a comparable analysis could be done for every other department, and you would probably see very similar results. I did it for biology because I can get the data. All of my data have come from public sources, and I didn't reveal any individual salaries. You could go over to the working papers and look that all up. So I just wanted to try to inform you of this, and I have lots more data. I'll be happy to come back and talk to you about these issues in the future as well.
Thank you for your comment. Any questions? All right, thank you. Let's turn our attention to President's Report number 107 then.
Thank you. There's two orders of business today. The first is the appointment.
Sorry? What?
I was wondering I might have a moment just to respond and give you an update on the salary work that is being done currently.
Certainly.
Okay. And first I would say thank you to Professor Naples for bringing this to our attention. It is something that as a university we want to look at and be sure that we do pay people equitably and that there's no gender bias. It will also second what she said in terms of the report that was put out in 2011. It was an executive summary, and so there was no accompanying technical report such that people could access the data nor look at it in any greater depth. And so those are certainly legitimate concerns. As a result of some of her concerns. In April, Provost Freeman and CFO Phillips asked that I initiate a task force to look at a salary study. And we have at this point two people who are co-chairs of this. One is Dr. Virginia Wilcox-Guck. She is a labor relations specialist and former chair of the Department of Economics. And we also, to help, so she would have a quantitative expertise and the qualitative expertise, looking at the stories, looking at the reasons behind things. We have Professor Kristen Myers, and she is looking at that. We actually, even this afternoon, have a planning phone call scheduled to talk more specifically about composition of this task force. We do have some support from the administration in terms of graduate assistant support for Dr. Wilcox. And our goal on this is to do this in-house with the expertise that we have available, but have it be something where we do within the group have diversity of race, gender, sexual orientation. We're looking at the presidential commissions. We're looking at getting people with specific expertise such that the colleges are represented. You know, ultimately, we'd have an executive task force, and then you'll have a qualitative committee and a quantitative committee. Again, the whole point on this, though, is to do this in a way that is replicable, that's transparent, and that we will make available to people after we're done. And we're looking at it more broadly than just gender. We're looking, we're including other variables such as race, also looking at it in terms of salary inversion and compression. Now, for those of us who have been here a long time, salary compression is a real issue, much like Dr. Naples was mentioning. So looking at a broad-based salary study that we will share with the Faculty Senate, University Council, as well as you. So I did want to let you know that we are, as a Senate and as a body, responding to the concerns she raised, because we want to be sure that if these issues do exist, let's know about it and respond to them.
Thank you. We're generally aware that these efforts are ongoing, but we appreciate your comment. All right. Let's return to your report, please.
Thank you very much. Two action items. The first is the appointment of an acting dean for the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, and I'll ask Provost Freeman to do that since she's the hiring officer.
Thank you. The members of the committee heard from Dr. Greb this morning when he spoke about some of the efforts to close equity gaps and achieve equal outcomes that have been ongoing in the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology. He spoke this morning as the acting dean, but he's been an associate dean in that college, involved in all of their efforts related to community college partnerships, industry partnerships, curriculum development, advising, and so he comes well qualified to serve as the acting dean. He was selected in consultation with members of the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology. There was an anonymous survey. I asked for individuals who would be interested to serve in this capacity and actually spoke to four qualified individuals who expressed an interest in leading the college. Dr. Greb was the most qualified of those, and we're pleased to have him serving in that capacity. So the recommendation to the board is that Dr. Omer Greb be appointed acting dean of the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, retroactively effective July 1, 2016.
Can I have a motion to that effect, please? Second?
Second.
Discussion? We'll need a roll call vote on this, please, Vicki.
Trustee Robert Boyd?
Yes.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman?
Yes.
Trustee Matthew Humps?
Abstain.
Trustee Robert Marshall?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Struthers?
Yes.
Vice Chair John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Mark Strauss?
Yes. Motion passes.
Thank you. The second item is the movement for some faculty to new tenure homes. So one of the main pieces of this is that in February you approved a name change for the School of Nursing, and we need to align the faculty with the new department or the new school. In addition, there are two faculty members being moved from the Department of Leadership, Educational Psych, and Foundations to the Department of Literacy and Elementary Education. Those change in homes is in response to program prioritization work and better alignment of faculty in the program of curriculum and instruction that had been split between the two departments. All the CI faculty will now be in one Department of Literacy and Elementary Education, which will allow the program to expand in innovative ways. So we would ask you to approve these changes in tenure homes.
So the recommendation is that homes be transitioned according to the departmental changes effective August 16, 2016.
Correct.
Can I have a motion to that effect? Second?
Second.
Discussion? So, Trustee Butler.
I believe Matthew seconded. Can Matthew second?
Let's take a different second just to make sure.
Second.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
I wasn't listening closely enough.
Okay.
All right. Any further discussion? We'll need a roll call vote on this, too, please.
Trustee Robert Boyd?
Yes.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman?
Yes.
Trustee Matthew Humps?
Stay.
Trustee Robert Marshall?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Struthers?
Yes.
Vice Chair John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Mark Strauss?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other matters to come before this meeting? The next board meeting date is
September 15th.
September 15th. That's a regularly scheduled meeting. So in the absence of the necessity for an interim special meeting, that's when the full board will meet next. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Aye.